Welcome to the Man Up Podcast.
I'm Winston Wolf. I solve problems.
A spiritual oasis for men. We're not pastors, just regular guys.
Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
So, for the uncommon man, created by equally uncommon men, this is Man Up.
Buddy, this is the Man Up Podcast. I think it's like podcast number 63 or something.
No,
we are 64. Yes, third grade math. Tough 3 years for me, that's for sure. Hey, my name is Bill Cox, and we're glad you're here. And where is here? Here is Sugar Land Baptist Church, Sugar Land, Texas, right outside of Houston. If you take a globe, spin that round thing, put your finger down, bang, it'll probably be in water. Find the United States. Get to Texas. Southeast side is Houston. Southwest side of Houston is Sugar Land, and that is where we are. This is the Man Up Podcast. We're not pastors. We're just regular guys trying to deepen our faith, and it's great to walk on a journey of faith with like-minded fellows. One thing about it, we feel that faith is a discipline. It needs to be exercised. And that's why we're here. It'll be about an hour. It's a podcast. It's great. We're on iTunes. And if you missed anything, we are archived on SoundCloud. We're in the study of 1 Samuel, Connect 360. And what we do is we go through, we have an adult Bible fellowship, go through a lesson, and then we have four awesome guys and me here to discuss the lesson, and we do it in a man-up
way. And there's Bill.
That's right, in a man-up way. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce, because we feel that not only are men defined by what they do, but also by their personalities and by their hobbies and avocations. And when you're going to find out what these guys do, you'll be able to connect with one of them on a very special basis. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to introduce the panel for this week. He is a policy writer. He comes here often. He's all healed up and he's a professional poker player. Mr. Steve Titch is here. And we have an attorney. He's a prosecutor though, so he can defend you or he can throw the book at you. We call him the judge. It's Mr. Michael Cropper. He's here. And Kyle Trahan, he is our class deacon insurance guy. He's here as well. And back, the professor, professional trainer, he's Robert Koshu. And my name is Bill Cox. I'm just basically a sales guy, a writer, an actor, and the director of Man Up. And what we're looking at is we're going to do actually two lessons because I was on vacation last week. And we're going to have a little summary of Lesson 9 and Lesson 10. But before we go to that, I'm going to have Mr. Michael Cropper do the summary. But I'm going to do him last because I want the fellas to introduce themselves so you'll recognize their voice as we talk about Lesson 10. So, Mr. Koshu.
Yeah, glad to be here. This is going to be interesting. In true Man Up fashion, I am totally unprepared. Did not even bring my book. I was supposed to be at a Houston SharePoint event and got all the way to I-10 in Boatway by Town and Country Mall and got a text that it had been canceled for the evening. So I turned around and came back here.
Talk about a score when you're a man. Having something after hour planned for you and then they cancel last minute, and that is not a bad thing.
But the fact is he came anyway.
And he came anyway. That's right. He had an excuse. Kyle Trahan.
Hey, good evening all. You know, interesting lessons for this evening. You know, for Lesson 10, the best of friends, we're talking about Jonathan and David and their relationship and everything. And I was looking back, you know, when we talked friends, we just went over the six battles every guy must win, and one of those is fight for your friends.
You know, I thought about that when I read the lesson, because I'm not like Koshu. Yeah.
And, you know, right. In that lesson, you know, we talk about David and some of the other guys, right. And the aspects of being friends and everything. Yeah. And this is such an important one, just, you know, men and a special bond and finding that person that you can actually rely on. So crucial.
And that is awesome, Kyle. And that's another great thing about this Man Up podcast. We give you the answers up front. You know, typical man way. You can listen to the first 10 or 15 minutes and you'll get pretty much the summary of what we feel about each lesson. Listen longer, and then we go into deeper of why we feel this way, and it's important. So, and Mr. Steve Titch.
Well, this again is about an interesting friendship, because it's the heir to Saul that becomes friends with the
actual heir, the guy who's going to take the crown.
And it's, well, we'll see how that plays out.
That is awesome. I want to give a shout out to someone that's KSBJ is following us on Twitter.
That is correct. KSBJ is the Contemporary Christian Radio Station here in Houston. They're on 89.3. They actually stream at ksbj.org, and they followed us on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. So want us to run. They were labeled Contemporary Christian Music's Large Market Station of the Year last year.
That is awesome.
That's very odd. I've been listening to them on and off for 20-something years. So, yeah,
same here.
Wow, talk about the whale following the minnow.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's a male minnow, though. Man up. So, that is awesome. Thank you so much. And any of you that found us through KSBJ. But also, we're going to turn this over to Michael Cropper. And he's going to give a summary on a little bit on lesson 9. What a bitterness and jealousy.
Yeah. Real quickly, folks, just a reminder, we are in Samuel, one of the greatest books in the Bible, with the stories and the reflection of how God can guide Israel through their times when they serve Him, don't serve Him. And here, where we've been talking about, is Saul being anointed the first king of Israel, and then he blows his relationship with God. He literally does some very, very selfish things instead of serving the Lord in leading Israel, and God chooses a new king. And of course, now we're talking about David, who has been anointed king over Israel. And this is in lesson 7. We're on lesson 10 today. David gets anointed king over Israel, and the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of God, leaves Saul and goes to David and anoints David. And by doing this, Saul becomes susceptible to his being tested, an evil spirit, the Bible refers to it. And somehow or another, the Lord brings into his life David. Now, David is anointed king of Israel, and shortly after that, the Holy Spirit, which has left Saul, rests on David, and Saul becomes very, very temperamental and very angered. And David is called to serve in Saul's house and to sing and play music for him to soothe his temperament. Later, then Saul again leads his armies out to battle the Philistines. And at that time, David goes home and comes back and hears about a giant by the name of Goliath. And Goliath, David has the Spirit of the Lord on him, and the Lord falls on him so greatly that he decides to fight Goliath. Of course, you know that story, folks. David wins, and he defeats Goliath, and then the Israelites are delivered from the Philistines, and they have a great, great victory. After that, we have David meeting Jonathan. When he comes back to Saul and he plays music for Saul, at this time he meets Jonathan, who is Saul's heir to the throne, which y'all have mentioned so far, guys. And Jonathan and David just become extremely, extremely close as friends. And folks, I don't know if you've ever had somebody, a real close friendship with a man of your own sex or a lady of your own sex, whatever, but you can have really, really close friendships. I can remember my best friend in middle school and high school. And there were just times we'd go out and get coats, we'd just talk for hours and hours and hours. And this is what...
Well, that's formative years. I think that's fairly common that people meet mm-hmm. the people that the friends that impact their life the most when they're both going through formative years and defining moments.
And well, so that and this, and this clearly is one of those. I mean, we can assume that these men are probably at the most in their early 20s and probably in their late teens.
Right.
David was the youngest of his family. He was a shepherd boy. He could be as young as 18 or 17 in this point. And I'm sure, obviously, Jonathan is his contemporary. So there are comparable to, like, being in college or high school.
We can go on to actually 10, because basically right. 9 was that. And that's right. Simply Jonathan, David meeting, become very, very close friends, even though Saul is after David. And then 10 will take us a lot deeper into that relationship.
Well, and I think Jonathan knew.
Oh, no question.
That David was the one that was anointed.
Well,
and so he's the one that really had the humility.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Saul actually order Jonathan to kill David at some point?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, he did.
Impression yeah, that, absolutely. Hey, I want this guy killed.
Right.
And Jonathan pulled back and said, hey, no. And I think what you said is going back to something that's come up over and over in these lessons for me as I've looked at them is the leadership qualities that David had. And he was, by all intents and purposes, a real leader, a manly leader, and a leader who understood his own weaknesses and knew, at least at this point for sure, and knew that he needed to rely on God at the same time. All of the things that Saul was missing in mm-hmm. this. You know, and I think that's one of the things that as you mentioned, Jonathan knew the score.
And we brought see, that up. We actually see, when we get to read the scripture here in chapter, I think it's in chapter 10, we get to see actually Jonathan make the decision. Because
yes,
chapter 10
no
opens,
question. No question.
He
yeah.
still wants to give, I mean, he still wants to give the benefit of the doubt to Saul.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's going to be open-minded about it, and ultimately he does make a decision.
In chapter 9, and since you mentioned that, Robert, and both of you mentioned mm-hmm. that, in chapter 9, Jonathan, when he meets David, he takes off his armor, and he gives it to David as a sign of homage, whatever it is, because just like you said, Robert, he knew, and Bill, he knew David was anointed to be king. I believe he was raised in the grace of the Lord and mm-hmm. the direction of the Lord from his father when his father was trusting and talking about how God could deliver the Israelites. And Jonathan gives up his armor, and that's a sign saying, I know that you're going to be king one day, and I want you to accept me as one of your servants and one of your people that will be in your kingdom under you. Anyway, so then we come to 10.
Yeah, which is actually right. Chapter 10 in the book and chapter 20.
It's verse 20. Chapter 20, sorry.
Chapter 20 in the Samuel, in 1 Samuel.
Kyle, what were you going to say?
You know, so, you know, Jonathan did give up his armor and, you know, his robe and stuff. It wasn't so much of the armor, but his, you know, the other stuff. But, you know, his dad did the same thing when he went out for Goliath. Put his armor on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, interesting thing. I think they were totally different aspects of what they were going for.
Oh, no question about
it. They were going for the opposite.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Saul was out that if David went out in his armor and slayed Goliath, well, then people may have thought that it was the king.
Right.
That it was Saul doing it. And then, you know, however many years later this is from that time, right. you know, that Jonathan is doing the same thing, but in a totally different concept.
Well, and you know, the thing about it is, from an agricultural standpoint, people don't understand. When you raise an animal, it treats you from birth, because you feed it, it treats you like king. You are the sheriff over it. It's when the animals that come from the outside, those are the ones you have to worry about. And the predators, you kill them. You cannot rehabilitate a predator, a bobcat, a coyote, a wolf. You slay it. And that's what he was used to by taking care of his sheep. And he was good at it.
Yeah.
And it finally got to the point with Goliath that he just went after the wrong person when David engaged, because David had more edge. He wasn't, unlike Jonathan, he wasn't raised inside the palace. David was out among the animals. He had that animal instinct. And I think that's part of what Jonathan recognizes in him. This guy is just a bad man, and he's been anointed. He is capable of taking care of the people. I think he realizes that.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, and with that, let's go ahead and we'll read the, this is Lesson 10, The Best of Friends. We're in 1 Samuel 20, 1 through 17, and 30 through 42. Then David fled from Naioth in Ramah and came and said before Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my guilt? And what is my sin before your father that he seeks my life?" And he said to him, "Far from it, you shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing either great or small without disclosing it to me. And why should my father hide this from me? It is not so." But David vowed again, saying, "Your father knows well that I have found favor in your eyes, and he thinks, 'Do not let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved.' But truly, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, but there is but a step between me and death." Then Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you." David said to Jonathan, "Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit at the table with the king. But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field till the third day at evening. If your father misses me at all, then say, 'David earnestly asked leave of me to run to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the clan. If he says, "Good," it will be well with your servant. But if he is angry, then know that harm is determined by him. Therefore, deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant with the Lord with you. But if there is guilt in me, kill me yourself, for why should you bring me to your father?" And Jonathan said, "Far be it from you. If I knew that it was determined by my father that harm should come to you, would I not tell you?" Then David said to Jonathan, "Who will tell me if your father answers you roughly?" And Jonathan said to David, "Come, let us go out into the field." So they both went out into the field. And Jonathan said to David, "The Lord, the God of Israel, be my witness. When I have sounded out my father about this time tomorrow or the third day, behold, if he is well disposed toward David, shall I not be then send and disclose it to you? But should I please my father to do you harm, the Lord do so to Jonathan and more also if I do not disclose it to you and send you away, that you may go in safety. May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. If I am still alive tomorrow, show me the steadfast love of the Lord that I may not die, and do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever. When the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." And Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies." And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you nor your kingdom shall be established. Therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die." Then Jonathan answered Saul his father, "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" But Saul hurled a spear at him to strike him. So Jonathan knew that his father was determined to put David to death. And Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had disgraced him. In the morning, Jonathan went out into the fields to the appointment with David and with him a little boy. And he said to his boy, run and find the arrows that I shoot. As the boy ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. And when the boy came back to the place of the arrow that Jonathan had shot, Jonathan called after the boy and said, "Is not the arrow beyond you?" And Jonathan called after the boy, "Hurry, be quick, do not stay." So Jonathan's boy gathered up the arrows and came to his master. But the boy knew nothing. Only Jonathan and David knew the matter. And Jonathan gave his weapons to his boy and said to him, "Go and carry them to the city." And as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from beside the stone heap and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. And they kissed one another and wept with one another, David weeping the most. Then Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, because we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord shall be between me and you, and between my offspring and your offspring forever.'" And he rose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city.
Friends to death, willing to die for his friend.
Well, and he almost did.
His dad. And yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. He went up against his dad for his friend. You know, right. For what was actually right. And you know, that's got to just be a seriously tough, you know.
Well, and not only the part where he goes against death, but if you think about it, so this is an old kingdom. So Jonathan's the heir apparent. He's going to be the king. He's going to get the concubines. He's going to get the harem. He's going to have the royal treasury. He's going to be in command of the armies. He's going to have basically everything he wants. And in essence, by acknowledging David and David's position,
he's given
all of that up.
Yeah. You're absolutely correct.
And literally, David could decide, you know what, there's too many people going to follow Jonathan after his dad's dead. I'm just going to kill him and be done with it and take over.
That's the way. It doesn't matter what the heir says. The heir may have people who are much interested in that heir being king. Take a look. Mary, Queen of Scots.
Ha! Well, excellent.
She didn't really want to be queen. She was kind of a ditzy, in fact.
Yeah.
But there were people who wanted her on the throne, and, well, we know that story.
Right. That didn't go so well.
No.
Well, and another thing is, though, you think of Jonathan. He's dealing with his father's depression as he's getting to the end of his life and his erratic behavior. And finally, it's like he's finally pushed to reconcile that, no, this isn't going well. I need to switch teams.
And I'm going to go beyond. I think we're at the point. We've seen some of Saul's eccentricities until this point. I think you're getting into a full blown depressive psychosis at this point with Saul. I really do. I mean, he threw a son at spear at his son. That is more from my studies and my experience leads more to a depressive psychosis.
Yeah.
Then just that's beyond depression.
You can't place your anger in a particular object.
Yeah.
Is that why?
There's no logical. Saul has no logical thinking left.
His hatred of David is completely irrational.
It's consumed him.
He's still the king. He's the king. He shouldn't be this afraid of the guy. But to your point, what you're saying, I mean, the dramatic aspect of this is that Jonathan not only swears fealty to David, he gives this curse almost, "May the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies." Well, who is David's enemy right now?
Saul,
his own father. So, I mean, he's making a dramatic statement of loyalty, a statement of alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Submission.
That's the word I was looking for, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, with
you start off with David here. That was it for a second. David is really scared. Both of them are afraid of each other at this point because they're unsure, right?
Correct.
David mm-hmm. is so afraid that Jonathan's going to turn and follow his father. He says, "You've sworn a covenant between you and me. But if there's any guilt in me, Jonathan, kill me. Why would you want to take me to your father?" Because he still believes at this point Jonathan may turn and follow his family, which the normal person would.
Right, with all that dangled.
Right? Yeah. But instead, Jonathan reassures him, oh, no, I know that you're going
to
become king.
Well, he also, but before he does that, Jonathan, I mean, leading up to that, Jonathan says, well, I haven't heard Saul say anything about it. You know, because David comes out. I mean, he's in the middle here. He's got his father saying, you know, going downhill, and he's got David, his best friend, saying, your father wants to kill me. And
again,
Jonathan says, well, you know, he hasn't said that. I don't know. He's almost saying, where do you get that idea? And David comes back and says, well, believe me, because he's not going to tell you. He knows you're my buddy. He's not going to tell you. So they contrive this, okay, well, I'm going to say I'm gone to Bethlehem and let's see what his reaction is, and then we'll really see. And this is, Jonathan makes his covenant with David there, but in a way he has to see for himself too. But he does speak up, he does speak up on David's behalf at the New Moon Festival, and that really gets Saul's goat.
Well, it's the new bull, young bull taking over for the old bull. The old bull is hanging on till the end. And when you, if you do that in agriculture, it's amazing the differences in the personalities. Some young bulls will not attack or won't push the old bull aside. Others will. And it seems like David is just one of those ones that is content to continue to be anointed, groomed, and as long as he's not killed, he seems to be absolutely fine with waiting his time, learning everything in the palace. He seems to be fairly agreeable. This right now is forcing the issue. This is forcing the issue of regime change. And this is absolutely critical. This situation with Jonathan. Jonathan is really the swing vote.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no question. Yeah, absolutely.
And so how he handles it, and it's kind of like a dog. When they get in a fight, when one dog is getting ready to kill the other one, it will expose its neck. And that's what he did. He essentially said, I'd rather have, if I'm going to get killed, you kill me rather than Saul kill me. Because he realized this was a critical moment in that regime.
Well, this is, not only that, but this is, from this point forward, David becomes the fugitive.
Right.
This is the point where, up until now, David has come in. He's been anointed by Samuel the prophet. He has joined Saul's court as his musician. He has slain Goliath. And from what we understand, he was part of the court during all this. That's how him and Jonathan became so close and became friends. And Saul also gave David one of his daughters his wife at this point. So he has been part of the entire Saul court, as it were. Now he's moving at this. This is the turning point where David becomes a fugitive. He gathers the mighty men that we've talked about and studied and moved on at that and this point. So this really is, this is the seminal story in the turn. This is the seminal moment where the story turns between Saul and David even more.
Well, and you know, he's liked by everybody. I mean, he slayed Goliath, so he's already a hero and, you know, a big figure in everybody's eyes. Then he becomes part of the court, and he's part of the warriors, you know, for Saul. He goes out and he's winning battles. And that's the catch.
Yeah.
He is winning battles.
David is.
The battles are not won for Saul. They're not Saul's battles. They turn into be David's battles. And when he comes back from war, everybody's praising David, not Saul. So not only do you have him, he's got all this praise from Goliath. Now he's getting all this praise and glory from his victories in battle, and he's being overshadowed by David. Well, that in itself, I mean, you're the first king of Israel. Well, you don't know if this other guy can just whack you off. Sure, you got a son that's supposed to take, but if he just comes in and slaughters you all, Well, then it's him.
Right.
So the paranoia sets in.
And we're going to go ahead and continue on with lesson number 10, The Best of Friends. We're in the Connect 360, Character and the Crown. This is Man Up. We'll be right back.
You are listening to the Man Up Podcast, spiritual oasis for men. Just like any muscle, we feel the faith muscle must be exercised. And here we do it real authentic, the Man Up way. Not pastors, just regular guys, each on a unique spiritual journey. Thanks for joining us. Deep questions and discussions you won't hear anywhere else, especially in today's climate. Missed an episode? They are archived. Free for you to select on SoundCloud. We come to you from the Man Up Studios at Sugarland Baptist Church, Sugarland, Houston, Texas, in the United States. Have a question or comment, or want to book a speaker or group and have Man Up come to you? Contact us on our Facebook page, Gigmasters, or WMACox@comcast.net. And now, back to fellows of Man Up.
And welcome back. This is the Man Up Podcast, podcast number, 64? We're glad you're here. We're at Sugarland Baptist Church in Sugarland, Texas. We're in a study called Connect 360, Character in the Crown. We're not pastors. We're just regular guys. This is a spiritual oasis where you can talk, or in this case, listen as men about items of faith that you are not free to talk about or even discuss in today's political climate, but you can hear. We are on iTunes. We are on SoundCloud if you want any of our archived episodes. We're also on Facebook, Man-Up, where you can post questions, and the group here will go ahead and answer those. I'd like to thank everybody that's following us, especially KSBJ, number 89.3 in Houston, one of the,
large market Christian radio station of the year last year.
That's right, and so they like regular guys, and that's what we are. And we're continuing on with the best of friends and talking about Jonathan's relationship with David in the final years of Saul's reign as king of Israel. One thing about, as we always talk about these lessons, how many times does it come to roost that it is really a man type of problem? Think of it this way. You have a job. You're working. You know your president is about to get whacked. And you know there's another guy in line to get it, and it's not you, although you may have been part of the heir. You might have been the vice president, but you just know somebody else has been picked. I think that's a big lesson Jonathan shows us. Even though Saul was his dad, he realized the Lord was not with him and was not with Saul's line anymore. And that's a hard reality for a man to realize. You're on the wrong team.
Just before this, in a previous lesson, if you read, many of the times, folks, you know, and Bill, you all know that we skip a lot of scriptures here.
Right.
But in the previous, possibly the previous a lesson, David is being chased by Saul and his men, and Michelle, his daughter, lets him out the wall of the building where
the compound,
they are, and lets her down. So she also has become allegiance with David. Of course, she's married to him, but as you all know, sometimes in some of the things we've read, the woman doesn't always back the man, but Michelle, Saul's daughter, loves David, and I believe with all my heart the same thing as you guys have been stating, that she believes also that David is going to be the king. And she,
well, and it's not only because of David. I believe it's because of Samuel too.
Oh yes.
I mean, and he anointed Saul, and Saul was king, and so I mean, Samuel's one for one.
So here's the deal: Saul won't let go of it.
Right.
This is why the fear has come over and everything. If he back up, he knows by now, or he believes by now, he should know by now, that David has been anointed to take his place. And instead of letting go and letting God, he holds on to even stronger and deeper, which causes what either the great anger, the great fear that he has for David, and that his whole family will be eventually destroyed.
Yes, but I want to go back to what the direction you were going here, because here we are, you know, office politics in the Old Testament. What grace it is on Jonathan's part and self-awareness, because the natural thing to do is, well, wait a minute, I'm the guy.
Yeah,
what's
right.
going on here? What's going on? And maybe even if you know you're the underdog, you know you're nowhere near as qualified as this outsider, this shepherd boy from Bethlehem. I'm going to dig my heels in. And Jonathan looks at the bigger mission.
Right.
We don't want to be too careful about creating parallels between, you know, Israel and your workplace. But nonetheless, sometimes it takes discernment to say, this guy, yeah, I got to be on the right team here, even if I'm not going to be the chief.
Right.
Because I've got a guy. How many times in the workplace have you seen somebody come aboard and get sabotaged by the guy who didn't get the job?
Oh, yeah. I would say every time.
Well, Robert is just laughing too hard over there.
There's a lot here we could unpack. So first things first, all leaders know how to play, and we've talked about this in past podcasts, know how to play to the strengths of each individual that works with them and how they can do it. So part of it is knowing how to play to the strengths, and sometimes knowing that is my favorite phrase that I like to use for me is, and this is the oxymoron I use, I'm smart enough to know how stupid I am. And you have to know where your limitations are and where you need to stop and go, hey, hang on a minute. And there's a couple of ways you can approach that. When you butt up against the wall where you don't know where you're going, you can keep pounding away at it, which a lot of guys, we're really good at that. Or you could take a step back and study and figure out how to solve the problem yourself. Or you end up moving forward by letting someone else take the lead and you learn from them as their mentor. And I think that's what part of what Jonathan is doing here is he's realizing, you know, David is the guy. David is anointed by Samuel. David is going to assume the throne. He's got his followers. Yeah, I'm the guy. But A, he's my friend. And B, my time's just not right. So it's time for me to be a part of this.
And then you overlay the faith.
Yes.
And clear, Jonathan had the insight to see this was the direction God was going in. Either prayerfully or the Spirit was with him. But when you think about it, it was actually a tremendously courageous thing to do. He was risking his life. He was turning against his own family. In fact, every value we get, you know, in the society, oh, you're loyal to your family, loyal to the... He chooses to be loyal to God's choice, not his choice.
Happens with his family, mm-hmm. right? No matter what happens, he could be enemy with his whole family after that. Mm-hmm. Right? That's
yes.
what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
He can turn, the whole family could turn on him.
Well, right after not that, he threw the spear. I'm
yes.
thinking that's got to be some kind of a concrete mm-hmm. thing. Of,
his brothers mm-hmm. could also turn on mm-hmm. everybody.
But also, and here the man thing, and we've talked about this many times in this, and this is particularly a man point of view. You have a circle of influence. And when Jonathan switched teams, I imagine his circle of influence was huge. Of course, he was the anointed one in his family. He was supposed to follow Saul. So he had not only his family, but he probably had the rest of the leadership of Saul waiting for him to take over. So they were in position too. So when Jonathan switched teams, everybody had the opportunity to switch teams. So he needed to make the right choice because he swayed probably most of the kingdom.
Maybe, maybe not. Some his family, but if he's got like his minister in training must be there wondering, well, am I ever going to get to be the, you know, the hand of the king now, to use contemporary
good point.
Things.
And more, right.
You know, I think you could count it on maybe his wives and his immediate family's loyalty on this. But anybody around his staff may be going, shoot, I didn't, you know, hitch my wagon to this loser now who's going over here. I'm gonna make it known that.
Right.
So it's speculation at this point, but I give Jonathan a little more credit for courageousness and for his loyalty to David, because I don't think he knew exactly what the outcome was and who was going to be on his side. He could have brought that leadership. He had the leadership. I'm sure it led to it, but I don't think he was 100% certain that everyone underneath him, quote-unquote staff, was going to go along with it.
Wholeheartedly agree. Because, I mean, you got to figure, if Saul is going into this dementia, this whatever, this psychotic state, whatever, and he's losing reality, he's losing that grip, if Jonathan, second in command, so to speak, is not stepping up to be the king at this point, the other guys around Saul are. They're running policy behind the scenes. They may still have Saul, but they have his ear. His mind and his judgment is gone at this point.
It goes back to the example of the American Revolutionary War, where King George III kind of had a little bit of a mental deficit going on, and all the prime ministers and everybody else was running the country and behind the scenes, and the king's just kind of
the head.
Yeah, right.
He's the figure. Here I am. I'm here, and as long as the populace could see them, everything is fine. Mm-hmm. The king is there. Everything is still running smoothly. It's kind of like the U.S. has turned out mm-hmm. to be. Everything is running fine for a while, so everybody just forgot about it. there's a president up there. They're doing fine, you know. But, you know, those guys had to have been running so much behind the scenes.
I'm running with that ball for a minute. They say, you know, it's a power vacuum. Nature abhors a vacuum. There is a power vacuum there. But you look at Jonathan. Jonathan puts his chips on God's choice. I mean, if we take what you're saying,
that's perfect. The gambler puts his chips on.
Chaos. There's chaos.
And he raised it.
No,
puts his chips down. Yes. Puts down there's, and he
there's,
raised.
There's, you know, there's all this scrambling probably around Saul. Who's going to take over? You know. We may be able to get Jonathan out of the way. Someone's thinking. Everybody wants to take over. And, well, I hate, Jonathan chooses a bit of an underdog right now. The guy who's on the run, I'm going to back you. I think, we go back to what you were saying earlier, Mike, I think maybe he did sense that God had anointed David. God was David's, David was God's choice.
I believe that. I believe Jonathan knew Samuel. I believe Jonathan knew that Samuel had anointed David. I believe that, and the things that David had done, like slaying Goliath, is just, and the fact that they got along. You know, I mean, all of a sudden, this is the All-American. This is the All-American that's living in the palace, man. He's next. I mean, he is better than me. And I can just see Jonathan. This guy's awesome, and Saul is going off the deep end.
As much as this story, and as much as these 10 stories now that we've studied, have been about David, because they have been, they've also been about Saul, who when we started, if you remember, Steve was defending Saul the entire time.
Right,
and then he did a flip, and then I started defending him. But it's a dichotomy of leadership. All the ways not to be a leader, Saul exemplifies. And what's funny is Saul is the guy who had everything from the beginning. He was tall. He was good looking. He was the warrior. He was the guy everybody wanted to follow. He prophesied. Samuel anointed him first. He was the guy that should have had it all. But he let his own leadership limitations define him. David's the kid they forgot about who was tending the sheep that they brought in, who chose to fight the battle a different way, who then gets put in the court to play to keep the king all happy, kind of blows that off, gets the wife. Now the king is going into his downward spiral, and he's chasing after him and trying to kill him and trying to turn really his best friend against him to help kill him. At the same time, David lifts all the potential for leadership he had. Remember, we're studying character in the crown. And it is a dichotomy of study between the two and how they acted as leaders towards their people and how people responded to them based on their particular limitations and strengths.
Awesome. And this has been a great discussion. I hope you've enjoyed it. We are in Connect 360, Character in the Crown. This is the Best of Friends. Go around the room one more time and get a summary from the fellas, basically on Jonathan and David, maybe their relationship, or even talk about friendship in general, because this is a challenging area for men, and we don't want to get so deep into the story that we ignore the reason why we're going through this, and the reason is we want to make men's life better, and that's why we're going through this faith journey with you. I'm going to go ahead and have the fellas a little summary, a little extra from the lesson. Start out with Mr. Michael Cropper.
All right, Bill. Yeah, fantastic lesson. Folks, if you guys read it again in your own time, 1 Samuel 21 through 17, 30 through 42, go ahead and include the scriptures 18 through 29. They fill in a little gap that we left out, which has to do with the banquet and the festival that takes place, and which is why Saul and Jonathan learns that his dad is still after David and wants to kill him again. And then we fill in the scriptures there when Bill read them from 30 to the end. You hear Jonathan bless David. He says, May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. And you know what that sums up. In the past, God has been with my father very strongly. Now may the Lord be with you, David. And in your remembrance, please do not cut off my family. If they got cut off from some other way, you don't have any covenant with me. You don't have any responsibility. But when you become king and my family is still alive, he says very clearly, please remember me and my family. I think the scriptures here are just awesome because you see a whole bunch of interaction between Jonathan and David. And then you see the movement again, as we've emphasized over and over again, that the Holy Spirit has left Saul. And rather than him give in to what would be wise, and that's simply move out of the way and let David become king, he fights against God, and you're never going to win against God, no matter what you do.
Friends are so valuable to men because they typically have very few, and the best ones are the ones that they have in the formative years. I don't know if I wrote this poem or I just read it over and over, but it's don't lead me, I may not follow, don't follow, I may not lead, just walk beside me and be my friend. And I think when men look at that and that kind of relationship, they will have a quality friendship, one like what Jonathan and David actually ended up with. So continue on with maybe a summary that you have, Mr. Steve Titch.
Well, yes, the friendship aspect of this, really important, and as we hinted at earlier, we did talk about this in the six battles every man must win. That, yeah, men don't have many friends.
and that's true.
They have very little time to develop it, but develop those friendships. But we see that here. We also see, and it's interesting, though we talked a lot about Jonathan's choice, this is an example in the Bible where a son goes against his father.
Incredibly rare.
Absolutely.
And with discernment, and is judged well for it. So it is an example. And I know there are family conflicts out there, and there are many instances where you've got maybe a parent who has trouble letting go of an 18 or 19-year-old, still sees them as a 12-year-old, and you want maybe prayerful maturity, but sometimes a tough decision has to be made. Do I go with new relationships with contemporaries, or do I go with someone that my prayers and my walk with God tell me maybe believes he has my best interest but may not have? I don't want to deal with that too much, but nonetheless, we see that important friendship shaping with Jonathan and David, and Jonathan grows from it. It's important in Jonathan's own growth. He's kind of a major character in this story. As I said, the turning point, not only symbolic for the way the story is turning, but for as a figure himself, he represents a personal connection. He is breaking with what his expectation is. The expectation is that he with his, you know, he follows his footsteps in his father's, and he truly angers his father, and there'll be consequences from that. But he chooses David. He chooses the next king. He chooses what he believes is the correct decision, is the direction God is leading the nation. And to sum up, he also knows that gracefully, he's not the guy. This is the guy.
That's right. Professor?
Yeah, find your friends. We had a passing at our church last year, Bodie Peak, one of our deacons, tech guys who had been a member, and actually very, very much a contemporary of me. His son and my older son actually graduated high school together, grew up together. And what amazed me sitting at the service was the way his friends talked about and what he had done for his friends and the way he had approached life to build friendships and build service as a part of that was one of the huge things. Other thing, I just want to throw a shout out. Life does go on. We are at Church of Land Baptist Church, as Bill mentioned, and we want to send a man up. Welcome to Jeff Moran, our new executive pastor.
That's the principal.
who will be here on August 5th for the first time, so we want to welcome him here. I had a little chat with Pastor Taylor, our senior pastor. He sat next to me during the service, and he actually commented it was really nice having a full staff room for dinner on Friday night. We have just hired Katie Massud, our new youth minister, and Alina Vaughn, I was trying to get her name correct, our new minister of missions. And so we're moving right along, and it's very exciting.
Excellent. Kyle Trahan, your comments and pray us out.
You know, when we talk about friends, and, you know, as I contemplate on the lesson itself, again, I go back to that six battles, and I went back and was looking at some of my notes, and in the book, Six Battles Every Man Must Win by Bill Perkins, he throws out three friendship traits that are crucial, that we're supposed to focus in on and work on to be good men and be good friends to each other. And one is to be a focused listener. Well, I think Jonathan pulled that off stellar.
Right.
He listened to his friend and knew what he needed. The second trait that he brought out was to be a big league encourager. And again, thinking on the lesson, he certainly pulled that one off for his friend. The third one is to be a courageous risk taker. You know, and certainly in this day and age, you know, most of us have all been hurt by a friend. We've all got battle wounds and scars.
That's because we're old. We're old guys. Yeah, we've been around, man.
Well, speak for yourselves. Yeah. You know, but we won't go any further. But, you know, being that risk taker and putting yourself out there sometimes is a hard thing to do, you know, for a lot of us. We build walls and we get comfortable within those walls, and it's hard to get out there and do it and to be a friend for the guy next to you, because we're all in this crazy world together, you know. And, you know, like our group here, we're there to make sure that you're doing okay, that you're getting through, you know, and to help guide you through it if you're struggling, you know. And that's the value of a friend. The guy that you know has your back will always be there, no matter what. Call me at 3 in the morning. If I hear my phone, I'll answer.
Oh, well, call Kyle. Yeah, that's Kyle. Kyle Trahan.
That's right.
Kyle.
We can give you your number.
That's right.
Probably find it on the website or something.
Hey, if it's before 8:30, you can give me a holler.
Maybe you should give out Kyle's on the podcast so everybody can call him.
But, you know, everybody can't wait until 2:30 or 3 in the morning to call him.
You know, but I have always been that guy.
Right.
That is true. That is,
I would agree
aside,
with that. Yeah, no kidding.
All kidding aside, that is true.
Kyle is
you know, I remember being a kid, and a friend of mine called, and they were in a bad place and said they had had enough in this world. And, you know, they reached out to me because they knew I would be the guy driving 100 miles an hour to get to their home, which I was, you know. You know, so it's, the point is stick your neck out there. Be a man. Be willing to get hurt and find a friend and stick by him. You know,
excellent. Go ahead and pray us out, Kyle. We'll call it a podcast.
Father, thank you for this glorious day. Thank you for these men that I get to hang out with and learn from, and this great country we have where we can express these opinions and put them out there on social media and all kind of other crazy things where technology has brought us. So that we can hopefully bring insight and meaning and purpose to other people's lives as well. Help us, guide us through today, tomorrow, and every day as we walk. Help us to be better men, better for each other, and better for others. And this I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
This is the Man Up Podcast. You can find us on iTunes. Also, we archive on SoundCloud. If you have a question or comment, you can put that at our Man-Up Facebook page. And we're also on Twitter as well. And I saw the professor scribbling some notes. So I'm going to fairly certain there's going to be some new stuff there as well. So we just want to encourage you, if you're ever in Sugar Land or the Houston area, stop on by. We have the Man Up Adult Bible Fellowship on Sunday morning. Or if we encourage each and every one of you to join a Bible-based church, get involved in the Adult Bible Fellowship or Sunday School class. Find a men's only class. And if there isn't one, start one. This is Man Up.
Later.
You've been listening to Man Up.
You've got answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Dedicated to the uncommon man, created by equally uncommon men.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You can contact us on Facebook under Man-Up. Post questions, and we'll answer them right here on the Man Up Podcast.